Previously on Stardub.
As I said, this is absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, the shittest comic I have ever read. It won't be the shittest comic I'll ever read, because can Triumphant be have an issue that's worse than this?
I feel the urge to track down an issue of Comium Man. I think Comium Man just sits fantastically.
I want Company X.
Company X.
Because it's Top Secret coming in June 19th.
Oh, yeah, I wonder about the advert for the Top Secret Company X.
It has the cover.
On the back. It has a picture of the cover, but all the faces of the characters have a big black line over them, so you can't tell who they are. And even though they'll have readily identifiable costumes from other Triumphant comics.
Yes. it's just.
Welcome to the future, dear friends. The future where, for you, 2 weeks have passed. For us, possibly 20 minutes have passed. During which time, I've had a rather tasty and gluttonous sausage supper from the local chip shop establishment, which I hilariously washed down with some 0.1% fat milk.
I, for my sins, had a nice hot sausage supper and full fat cola. I'm Andy.
I'm Rob.
And we're back for 2.14 of Stardub.
Stardub, the most exciting podcast on the history of the planet, which is the planet Earth and not the planet Pluto, because Pluto is a planet. I don't care what anyone says, Pluto's a planet. The purpose, however, of this particular podcast is, as always, to talk about those various bits of pop culture that maybe don't quite get the recognition that they deserve, or perhaps aren't even talked about at all.
Or even entitled to.
So this episode is a special thrilling episode, for it's a comics cavalcade, a cavalcade of comics that you might not see much reportage, going from the present day back in time through to such time periods as the 80s and the 90s. So, kicking off,
we promised you an exciting cliffhanger.
We did promise an exciting cliffhanger. At the end of the last exciting episode, which also, funnily enough, took place on the space year 2012, on the dateline of July the 11th, a brand spanking new comic came out from the W called
Transformers Regeneration 181.
Also,
we talked about another franchise that's coming back, Battle Beasts.
That's right, Battle Beasts. Now, what you might not be aware of, which is understandable, is that Battle Beasts are not only back, but they're back in a big way.
In two big ways.
Now, indeed, and one can never go wrong with a big way, except in an alley at 3 in the morning. But anyway, moving on. In the 1980s, there was a toy line called Battle Beasts. Now, if you were in the West, Battle Beasts were small figurines with limited articulation. They could move their arms, basically. And they were beasts. Funnily enough, and on their chest they had a little symbol, like a rub symbol, and they went for the gimmick of fire, wood, or water. And the idea is that you would buy these small pocket money figurines, which are sculpted like animals, called Rudderbuck Duck, Horny Toad, and various other quite splendid names, and you would collect these, and you would play with your friends, and whichever you would rub the symbol on the chest to see what it was, and that would determine who would win. So, wood would defeat
water.
Water. Fire would defeat
wood.
Excellent, and so on and so forth. Exactly the kind of game that young Ralph could never master, because he could never remember which beat which. Anyway, and you may have seen it advertised in the back of Transformers comics.
And, well, Marvel UK.
Marvel UK in general. Battle Beasts, it's one of those strange things. It depends where you were. Battle Beasts was either something you saw advertised in the comics and never got into, or even saw the toys, or you saw them quite a lot. But either way, they didn't last very long.
And the thing that we didn't realise in the West was, although we knew that the advert showed they were made by Hasbro, they were actually a Transformers spin-off, as years later when people got to see the Japanese-only cartoons.
Transformers Headmasters.
One of the episodes features the Battle Beasts.
Not only one, but two episodes. They do return an episode later on. They're prominently featured in one,
in and then briefly, five.
Yes, and then briefly feature later on. And it has one of the best named characters ever, who's a sort of lion type chap. And thanks to the hilarious dog, he's known as
Sheep Commander.
Which, frankly, in fact, I only actually own one Battle Beast toy, which I hopefully still have in a box and hopefully hasn't been lost between house moves, because I would not have got rid of it on purpose. I never would, because it's Sheep Commander and it's just splendid. So this brings us up to the present year 2012, and it's been relaunched both in the West and back in Japan.
Now Japan is going for very much what it previously was, so it's a proper spit and polish job on what it came before. Yeah.
That's known as Beast Saga.
Yep.
And the figures are based on both the original toys and the original characters. So they retain the names, they retain the look, they've been updated with modern sculpting, and they still have a game gimmick within them. There's also like a board game that comes with it, and there's been some pieces of manga, but I don't know if they're promotional or if they actually put out a strip in any magazine or whatever. And quite frankly, I am waiting for the day that pre-orders are available, because they look fantastic and they are small, so they will not take up lots of room, which is always an issue for me. However, in the Western lands, which is where we are,
the toy line's been done through the highly popular Minimex.
Yeah, it's been done. Now, there was like, they got the license 3 years ago for Battle Beast and announced it was going to come back, and then sat on it for all this time. So they figured out, did they want to actually do a line? Did they want to just do like a Comic-Con thing? Was it going to be a one-off? And eventually they decided that it belongs to comic shops initially, and if it takes off, maybe to actual toy shops, who knows. Battle Beast, they're quite different, and they're Minimates, and Minimates are okay. I don't mind them. I don't buy them very often, because Lego exists, but they're okay for what they are. I've bought the occasional figure and enjoyed it, and generally they're little minifigure bodies, and you add on parts to them to form various stuff, so I was quite happy with them, and I thought they looked okay, but now I've seen Beast Saga, I'll go for that. Anyway, this brings us to IDW,
who are putting out the accompanying 4-issue miniseries comic to promote.
To promote what said Western Twilight. Now, it's a bit of a strange beast, this, because originally Battle Beast was a line aimed at very young children, and the new toys, although quite suitable, as far as I can tell, for children to play with, initially not generally going to be available where children might go. So it's one of those strange things where, like back in the day, there's a promotional comic, there's no cartoon I'm aware of,
no,
to support it and advertise it. So it's one of those ones where you go, who do you aim this comic at exactly? Do you aim them at adults? Because, quite frankly, though we have a bit of nostalgia for Battle Beast, they were never a huge thing as a much of a market. So IDW, I've done this comic, which is available through Comixology, their app, and also in comic shops.
So,
and it's made by whom?
Okay, critically minded. It's written by Bobby Curnow. Art is by Valerio Chidi.
Good name.
C-H-I-D-I. Colours are by Claudia SGC.
Mm-hmm.
And letter by Sean Lee.
Did you work for Stargate Command?
Apparently so.
Excellent.
Obviously, in the shops, you can have one of five covers.
Except the shop I went in today. Now, a brief word about the printed version. We're looking at the digital version. The printed version, this shows an interest of mine. I'm interested in paper stocks, okay, and books and comics. I don't know why, I just am. And I was quite excited to see that it had a card cover, like what all IDW comics used to have until they brought in just the same stock as the interior pages as a cost. Saving measure. So I got a card cover, and I always bought it, and I thought, no, I'll buy it digitally because it's cheaper and it must cost me. So we bought it, and now we're going to review it for you.
Yep. So there's five covers if you buy it in print, only the one if you get it digitally, which is the cover A by Dan Brereton.
It's quite nice.
It's very nice painted art. The retail incentive covers by Ulysses Farinas, who did the much unfairly maligned Galvatron Heart of Darkness miniseries.
He did. I liked the art on that, I just didn't like the writing.
Likewise. Then there's a retail exclusive for Comic Market for a couple of shots by the series artist. There's another convention exclusive one, but again by Ulysses Farinas. And again, there's another convention cover done by the artist team in the book. So,
before Andy does his in-depth review, I will do my capsule review, which is this. First third, I enjoyed it. Second third, terrible. Last third, boring. And I also had a very good cake today, which was a peanut butter sort of fudge thing, and it was really, really good, and I kept thinking about it when I was eating it, because I really enjoyed it, and it was a special treat after a hard day's work. Andy will now review the comic in depth. I'll see you in a few minutes' time.
So it kicks off with an establishing shot of a strange alien-looking world, a campfire in some sort of deserted bit, and there's a sort of bipedal eagle-y type, walrus type, and goat type, all in sort of armour with weapon, melee weapons, bitching about sort of how they're eating and what have you, as there's, well, the eagle and the walrusy chap are. The goat's looking moody, giving us an internal monologue while holding a sword.
Which is fine.
And then all of a sudden, fuck tons of beasts come out to attack them. Big scorpions, a vulture, jet, lizard, spidery things.
It's all good. All
and
good.
Basically, they start fighting as you would expect. Now, so the first 4 pages are kind of, it's there, it's exactly what you would expect it to do. Page 5, you finally get a couple of names. The eagly chap's called Merc, and the big walrusy chap's called Gruntus.
Which is a bit disappointing, because generally they have more descriptive names.
Run amok
duck and stuff. Barney Toad. We'll let that one go.
So, they have the fight, and here's your first sign of it not really being anything to do with kids, is that there's a bit of blood, quite a bit, as bladed melee weapons are buried in the bed of an animal, the beastie chap.
Unfortunate.
So basically the three, as the goat's still monologuing, the three of them manage to beat the
hell out of them. Can I just say though that the fact, in the sense, there's a goat still monologuing is actually worthy of some joy.
It's true.
Very rarely we have a goat monologue,
it's
anything.
And he basically gives the reason on detriment to why everyone's attacking them, is these, it would appear that the whole thing is, these beasts exist to fight and nothing else. But these three, rather than fight each other, have kind of teamed up and aren't getting involved in the proper fighting. They're trying to stop it all. But what happens is that all of a sudden, they're surrounded, it's, you're going to die. We learn that the goat chap's called Vorin.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. Then all of a sudden, the call comes out, which is Thran, Nax, Orv, Lorgda. And it's basically all the beasties go, hurry the call, we'll miss it. And it's all sorts of spacecraft appear.
At this point, I'm still actually quite enjoying this. It's an alien planet, it's a mysterious summons. I kind of done with the blood, but to be fair, there's not like guts and bits of body flying around the page, so that's a matter of taste.
And they're heading to Earth.
Oh dear.
So this is the end of
Act 1. Because we can't identify with it unless there's humans in it.
See that? So this is kind of the end of Act 1. And Act 1, yeah, it's not brilliant.
Possible.
But it's good, and I'm actually interested at this point. I'm like, okay, let's see where the story goes, this is good. The minute you go to Earth, warning alarms, please, I don't need objects of identification. And here is where it starts to suck ass. 10 minutes ago, Department of Defense San Francisco Annex caption. Some human character runs in saying, oh, I've translated some big mystery thing. Unless everything changes today, people are going to start taking notes of Bliss Reynolds. Yes, and she goes to interrupt some scientist-y chaps who are trying to unlock some strange circular metallic spheres that are encased in some sort of force field at the moment. She goes, I've translated the sphere scrolls, he goes, and the main scientist is a bit of a dick, goes blah 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 blah, you've not done anything. Department of Defense have contracted us to break this supposedly unbreakable new metal they found, blah blah blah. He initiates some lasers to try and break them. Lasers are good.
Yeah, I like lasers. But these characters are hateful.
Lasers have no effect, and the scientist checks, no, they're unbreakable, they're comically square unbreakable. And she just goes, they're not meant to be broken, they're meant to be opened. And he tells her, she tells him that, I've translated it. She says the big code word again, Thran, Nax, Borv, Lorgda, and the spheres unfurl into gauntlet weapons by the looks of things.
Yeah.
And she says, I'll be like, blah, blah, here's how it is. He basically goes into the force field, takes the spheres and runs away with them. I have to tell him. She asks, who's him? Then all of a sudden, the building starts to quake.
Oh.
Then there's lots of fire coming from the sky.
Mm.
Basically, the craft has landed. And out come the beasts, and it's a big bear with a big meat hook, or a big cleaver, sorry, getting fired on by the police, and he just levers them. They run a car on, he just hunkers down and goes bang and takes out. Then the last panel on the aforementioned page, you get cop getting out of the car, goes, "That got the bastard."
Dear.
I don't need swearing in comics to make him adult or mature, and if you're doing a book called Battle Beasts based on a fucking toy line, profanity, seriously? Yes. Especially as you've done the comic book swearing
six pages previously,
make your fucking mind up.
I like how we're using profanity to make a point about how there shouldn't be profanity in this comic.
Yeah, I know.
Moving on.
There's an irony there.
There is indeed an irony.
So anyway, the bear then just keeps letting this stuff. It turns out there are all these monsters all over the city. You see me praying mantis-y chat across a couple in the park. There's an alligator in the sewer. There's a big armadillo chat in a Japanese restaurant. There's a cheetah running down a bridge. And there's a faltery chap leathering through a call center. And then cut to Big Eagle chat. The city is just completely in ruins and there's all these strange animals attacking. Back to the lead human identification character, being told she can't go out there, she's got to go and get her brother.
So she goes
to the high school. Turns out, he's not hiding in a classroom, he's away stealing things from a shop class.
At this point, we don't care if he lives or dies.
At this point, it's like she's trying to rescue him, get back to the lab, and then she is confronted by Bulbasaur Chap, who's speaking his language. She bumps into Goat Chap. They're all speaking an eagly chap. They're trying to talk to them, but can't get anything. Then Bear Chap comes up. And so the Walrusy and the Eagle Chap and Goat Chap get back in the fight. There's a Hammerhead Shark, there's a Poultry Chap again. And they're just having exchanges in their alien language while fighting. And so the two humans run away, and she recognises, I know that language, I've just spent time translating it. So they try and flee, a big wall comes down, Bear Chap's there. Now it starts with, I actually quite enjoyed this a little bit, where the knobhead's brother with a little mallet twats the baby in the nose.
I don't approve.
However, once he does this, he says, "See, I knew I needed a weapon, mallet. Stay still," Bear then growls and gets ready to kill him, rather than running the fuck away after immediately twatting the bear.
Right, can I make a point here?
Are we going to go into your bear nuke thing? Please.
No, I don't think we need to. This hasn't been explained before, right? Now, bears, and people know about bears from films. So, listen. Because people see bears and they think bears are angry, right? And then people watch nature documentaries and they forget what you're told. And some people think that you shouldn't run away. Or some people think that you should stay very still, and what tends to happen is people get killed by the bears. Right. So the problem is running away isn't going to work. Because the bear is stronger, the bear will chase you, the bear will get you, you will die. It's more stamina than you, more strength, and those are things you die. If you stand still, like some people think you do, the bear will just walk up to you and go, "Arr!" and it'll just claw you to death. The only way to satisfactorily defeat a bear is to throw a nuclear bomb at it. Now, this would have the advantage of killing the bear, full out, rendering any threat to human life gone. You're going to die anyway. The thing is, if a bear's coming for you, you're going to get gubbed. So you at least want to make sure you take the bear out. However, if you throw a nuclear bomb at it, there's a slight chance you might survive, as opposed to the other options where you will die a horrible grisly death.
Now, this is why Ralph is current head of Absolute fucking Muppet Labs.
Because obviously, right, if you're going out in the wilderness, you just make sure you have a pocket-sized nuclear device on you. So you just throw it. Now, I have learned from Predator, the great documentary starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, where it shows you him in the jungle fighting aliens. It's a good documentary. And in that documentary, it shows me that if you just, like, jump over the log and a nuclear bomb goes off, you're fine, as long as you're covered in mud. So what you do is you just make sure you have a handheld throwable, like a disc, a wee disc. And if a bear comes at you, one or two things. You either detonate the bomb on the spot and just have yourself a nice, quick, clean death, like I said earlier. Or preferably, you just throw the bomb at it, cover yourself in mud, jump over the log, the bear will get engulfed by a nuclear explosion, and you're fine. The slight downside is that that area might be radioactive for a while, but that's why it's a small nuclear bomb you have. I've explained this.
Not really keying in on the fact that the biggest downside is that you don't survive. So again,
No, there's a chance. If you jump over the log, you could be okay.
General listener, I can assure you that the looks on your faces right now are mirrored on mine right now, and I've heard this theory several times before.
I don't understand why no one understands. And I thought about
basically,
it when I read the comic.
This should be coming out just before Autoassembly, or I think, maybe.
I don't know. I guess after.
Oh, bugger.
No, right before. Sunday before.
Oh, sorry. So anybody who's coming to Autoassembly, can somebody come in a big bear costume, please?
Because when I saw this bear scene, I thought, you don't hit it with a big twig. Or the like, you just throw a nuclear bomb at it. I mean, they're attacking the city. And I think, had there been such a scene, then it would have taken this comic, which started as not very good, but readable B-frame, slotted in some terrible human characters, and we get to the end.
And the bear's about to kill the twat.
But
turns out, nope, because the goat shanks him in the back with his big sword. And then she tries to speak using the language, and he has a wee chat back. And apparently it turns out the beasts are coming for her. It's to be continued.
So that was issue one.
Again, I wanted to like this a lot more than it did, because Battle Beast, I thought, you can have a lot of fun with that, and for the first third they did. Big misconception is human identification characters. It's much the same as for TV, putting child actors in.
Yeah. If I'm picking up a comic called Battle Beast, whether familiar with the original or not, maybe I've seen adverts on IDW Comics or seen the small, and I do mean small, I went a buzz online about it. I might have been curious also. All the covers clearly show alien type animals in an alien type environment doing alien type stuff. It doesn't need human characters. If it was like properly aimed at kids, I can understand why they might put them in. But
it's not.
I think we've talked enough about this because time is marching on and we're going to try and keep to time on this podcast. So what we're going to do, right, is I'm going to do like a link between this and the next item, which is really quite clever, which is this. Some of the beasts might wear masks, right, because they're beasts on an alien planet, and they're from the 1980s, which is where people wore masks in the 1980s in a comic called Mask, based on the Mobile Armored Strike Command. And we're going to do a review in 3 minutes of this comic.
I could do a review for you.
What issue is it?
It's issue 4 from the Space Year, May 1987, which would have cost you 75 cents in the US, $1 in Canada, and a princely sum of 40 pence in the UK.
It's the American version of that.
Yes, and it was approved by the Comics Code Authority, which is good, because I don't fucking approve it.
Why not, Andy?
Well, I can give you a review and inside a couple of seconds.
Do it.
It's fucking hot shit.
What happens in it? It's called Map Tracker Outlaw.
Yes, it's written by Michael Fleischer, who bombed the 2008 editorial offices with a lot of shit.
If you want to find out more about how Michael Fleischer bombed 2008 offices, I recommend Thrill Power Overload by David Bishop. The History of 2008, that is a good book, well worth your 25.
Talks about how he sent all these rubbish scripts in, but because of editorial policy, he couldn't have inventory, so they had to get made. As art by the legendary Kurt Schwann and Kurt Schaffenberger from the Superman books. Mm-hmm. Basically, it continues on from a previous issue where they have Floyd Malloy, who had the bike thing that shot Bob Behrens.
Mask were the people who wore special masks, they gave them special powers, they had special vehicles to transform, and they fought Venom, led by Miles Mayhem.
Yes, basically they're escorting Floyd Malloy to a prison cell. Venom try and break him out, they stop him using their gimmicky vehicles and the like. But cut to then, they go back, so Matt Tracker goes back home, speaks to his son, and gay D-Bob.
Don't diss D-Bob, he's great.
Not in the comic, nobody's good in the comic. D-Bob
brings life.
Not in this.
D-Bob was the robot kids, the charming robot who was a friend of the child, and often saved the day.
Matt's going to testify for a Senate subcommittee. So he leaves his son to be looked after by a housemaid and the robot. Housemaid gets taken out by an evil Venom operative who is much younger and more attractive than her. So she dresses up like her but not like her at all, goes in and kidnaps the boy and T-Bob. Mm-hmm. While Matt's testifying before the Senate.
You know when you've been T-Bobbed.
Venom managed through sly rags to get a note to Matt Tracker saying that we've got the brat, and if you want to see him alive, you have to spring Floyd Malloy. Mm-hmm. So using his Thunderhawk, his Camaro with wings, uh-huh. he rescues him and frees Malloy, goes after Venom, tries to stop them, mm-hmm. Rescues his son, but the Senate still think he's a bad guy, so he basically flees to go and try and get his name cleared. It's fucking awful. It just... The Mask comic in the UK was great. It was full of lots of short stories and quite a lot of life.
One day we'll review an issue.
Yes, however, this is just dull, lifeless, and just... Best things about this comic are the adverts.
Oh, and good ones.
Yes, because there's an advert for the new Justice League by Geoffrey DeMatteis and Kevin Maguire.
Still in print to this very day, must be good.
Excellent. The Spectre by Doug Moench and Gene Colan.
Mm-hmm. Gene Colan, the late Gene Colan, one of the best artists ever worked in America. Still very good.
Mm-hmm. And there's an advert for the little small page ads, which is fantastic.
I miss those in comics.
They're because really it has an advert for the best wrestling book ever.
Really?
An in-depth, colourful look at today's superstars. See superstars in giant full-colour action photos, each with several pages of biography, career analysis of wrestling styles, moves, unusual physical statistics, titles, famous rivalries, predictions, plus heroes, villains, tag teams, women, celebrities and more. Were authoritatively written, warning, many photos of actual fights are bloody, vicious and cruel. There's a 30-day trial, we give you some partial context. So I'm going to read all of these wrestlers, I'm going to see if Ralph knows any of them.
I don't know anything about wrestling, I don't understand. I didn't know I was getting a challenge, I'm not prepared for this.
Andre the Giant.
No.
He was in The Princess Bride.
I don't like The Princess Bride. Okay. It's a terrible film.
Abdullah the Butcher?
No.
Jerry Crusher Blackwell?
It would seem not.
Ric Flair?
I don't know.
Gav Spence right now is staring daggers at the computer screen.
Some name rings a vague bell.
Gorgeous Jim Garvin?
We've seen that an inker in Transformers comics.
No, that's Brian Garvey.
Okay.
Hulk Hogan.
Ah, he was in Thunder in Paradise and Suburban Commando.
Okay, so that's one.
Thunder in Paradise, all I actually watched it because Patrick McNee was in it and it was on a boat and I like things on boats. I didn't watch it because Hulk Hogan was in it.
Junkyard Dog?
Wasn't that a Doctor Who strip? No, that was Junkyard Demon.
Kamala, the Ugandan giant.
Is that not a disease?
No. The masked superstar.
Was he?
Yes.
Oh, excellent.
Rick Martel?
No.
The missing link.
The quiz show.
Dusty Rhodes.
Disease.
Sergeant Slaughter.
Oh, he was in the G.I. Joe movie, the cartoon one.
Okay.
Hat.
Jimmy Superfly Snooker.
Is that a sport?
Rowdy Roddy Piper.
I've heard of him. I don't know who he was, but I know his name.
They Live by John Carpenter is probably where you...
Oh, I don't like that film.
And Hell Comes to Frogtown.
I feel I should have seen a film with that title, but sadly haven't.
I think we've got some watchable tat for next week.
Watch Hell Comes to Frogtown. Is it actually a town of frogs, or is it a town named after frogs?
I can't remember.
I want mutant frogs attacking people. Rick's killing them.
Rick Steamboat.
Former Transport.
Jimmy Valiant.
Comics Company.
Big John Studd.
Star of questionable movies.
Kerry Von Erich.
Planet.
Kevin Sullivan.
No.
Greg Valentine.
Will this end at some point?
Yes.
No.
The Freebirds.
Boy Band?
The Iron Sheik and
no
Nikolai Volkov
no
The Road Warriors
The Mad Max
no but inspired by it. So I'll at least allow
excellent some, this is audio gold
the Fabulous Moolah
was he a camp fellow
she
oh <dear. laughs>
and Wendy Richter who was also a she.
Okay, well that was so good. That was good.
You gave 1.5.
I think we should move on.
But that's pretty much That's the best bit about this comic. This is actually the most joy I've had out of that comic. Is the look of terror on Ralph's face, because he knows he should at least get a couple of these names.
I don't understand wrestling, and I don't understand the other one you made me watch. The one with the mostly naked men molesting each other on the floor and then making each other bleed. I didn't approve of that.
Ralph speaks of UFC.
I don't approve of
UFC. If there's anybody here who does cage fighting or anything, by the way, I'm not mocking it. It was Ralph. Remember, Ralph.
I don't understand. But what I do understand is that they found the new moon of Pluto, and instead of giving it a cool name like Charon, they've called it P5, and yet keep up this utter shite myth that it's a dwarf fucking planet. It's not a dwarf planet. It's a real planet. So let's talk about planets which feature in comics, because there's a planet in this comic here that people are on in this comic. What is it called that I've put in your hand?
I thought we were going to leave this for another time.
No, we're going to do it now because you've made me answer wrestling questions.
But this is one of joy, so it's going to be an odyssey.
It's a small moment of joy for 5 minutes exactly, as we desperately try to keep on time, followed by a 10-minute listener special, which gave to us from listener Phil Ayers. Hello, Phil. We'll talk about you in 5 minutes' time.
Yes.
Let's have a small diversion into goodness called
Warheads from Marvel UK. First issue.
Warheads. Issue one.
Drawn by
Wolverine.
Yes, because it's the 90s. It's a Marvel comic.
It must have Wolverine or Hulk.
Most known, it was Wolverine and Ghost Rider and the Punisher.
But in the Marvel UK 90s stuff, they often have to shove the Hulk in as well.
But anyway,
talk about it.
Warheads was the lead-offs to Marvel UK's new sort of universe using Mystique. We've talked about Mystique before. It was a decent idea, but it didn't have to be the underpinning of every book, and got very tedious very quickly. Warheads. Basically, it's like Stargate, except instead of going to explore, they just go to steal things that could be of financial benefit to the Masters. Best thing about it, though, is it's drawn by Gary Erskine.
Yes.
Who, I've talked about this podcast before because of his tenure on Knights of Pendragon, because he's one of the few comic artists that draws in sort of mainstream superhero comics, or that's got close to mainstream superhero comics today, that draws people that look like normal people.
Yeah, they're not overly muscular or pneumatic.
It's even great artists still do not do real people. I love Alan Davis, Jim Lee, their work is beautiful, but they don't do normal, average or ugly people.
Yeah.
Whereas Gary Erskine has the ability to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a much underrated ability, and it makes his work stand out. We've always enjoyed his work. It's insanely detailed.
Yeah.
Strange scavenged armour and battlesuit technology. It basically ties into older events in the Marvel Universe, where the X-Men were based in Australia, having everyone thought they were dead, and due to having went through the Siege Perilous, couldn't be detected by electronic devices.
Mm-hmm.
So the Warheads are in play, going to look for stuff, so all the tech's kind of used to them. But there's a twist.
Oh.
On the mission is the head of this team of Warheads, Kevin Troop, Colonel Liger. He's got his team, who are all introduced quite quickly in the first stage. You've got Stacy, who's troop defensive in sort of big massive power armour, like a space marine from 40k. You've got Perez the medic, again he's an army. You've got Corey, who's a technician. Kale the retriever, who is kind of like a woman. Draft, who's the hitman, so obviously he's just a point and click, I'll kill. And you've got Misha, who dresses weirdly and is the Psy Scout. But it turns out that the events that are about to happen are preordained, because this is in 1998, the Warheads encounter Wolverine.
Hey.
Liger has a fetching set of scars on his face that look like they come from claws. Now the reason for this is in 1990, he was in Madripoor, which is where one of Wolverine's hangouts. Wolverine sees him, and at this point he doesn't have any scars, and cuts him up and tells him to remember that people will die. He remembers this, so knows that something funny is going on, and tries to stop his girlfriend from dying. But she has to allow events to run their course.
Indeed.
So by him trying to protect her, he puts her in harm's way, They escape, and they go back to Mistech headquarters with the strange Master Key who helps them and the wee evilly cherub characters that steal things. To introduce our point of view character, Stacy, who's going, not sorry, Stacy, sorry, Leona, who's going to join them. There's an outsider looking in to kind of get into the head of the characters a bit. To be honest, I really enjoy it. The biggest problem with Warheads is that Gary Erskine's only on the first two issues and then jumped ship.
Yep.
Now,
people tend to think he was on it for longer than he was.
It's something he said before in interviews that that people associate him with this as it being one of his big defining works.
Yeah.
And while he indelibly did stamp his mark on that, he is, say, he moved on after that. Now, I'm going to say something really apocryphal here, and something I think Ralph will take great offence to, is the artist who takes over on issue 3 is Jeff Senior, and he's horrible.
If you go down a hole, you die.
He just doesn't fit with what's been established. He's an absolutely bad fit for it.
No.
Storytelling's fine.
No.
I'll show you the issue. We'll review it on a future
podcast. I refuse to ever say anything bad about Lord Jeff.
He's just not a fit for it. It's well delineated, well rendered, but the artwork isn't sort of massive superhero dynamic and stuff. There's lots of pauses. It looks kind of, let's say, it's not meant to be sort of absolutely in-your-face energetic. It's meant to be a little bit sort of slower and a little bit more staid, which is why when you see Jeff Senior on issue 3, it's just, no, you're not the artist for this book. I like Jeff. He was doing Hell stroke Dark Angel at the time, and that was good.
I'm shaking my head about Audio Legion, aren't you?
He was just not the man to pick up after him. Quite a night and day shift from art styles.
If there's a bear, and the bear is coming for you, you chuck a nuclear bomb at it. That's all I've got to say to that. So, we move on from that actually genuinely good comic to the thrilling finale, the climax of climaxness. Of this particular podcast. This is the Phil Ayres sponsor section of the podcast. Phil is a man, and he lives in Swindon. And most of the time he's a nice man, but sometimes he's a bad man. And sometimes Phil likes to torment us and give us bad things. It doesn't happen very often, but when it does happen, it's spectacular. Phil listened to a previous episode.
He was there, he read the first one.
And then listened back to the episode where we talked about a comic from Triumphant.
Yes, our old friends, the Triumphant, are back.
So he has provided us with two...
Oh, well, I should say, listeners right now, I don't mean they're actually back. Please take the guns out of your mouths. They are defunct. However, we do have
two comics published by Triumphant, that amazingly shit short-lived 90s comic. So we'll start off with the least worst of the two. What do we have?
We have the Chromium Man issue 1.
Now, what's most disappointing with the Chromium Man issue 1 is that the cover is not in chromium foil.
I know, this is a 90s comic. Where the fuck is my chromium?
It actually isn't out with the realms of possibility for a 90s comic. The name of it itself would be based around having a foil cover for issue 1.
Yes.
So the Chromium Man, tell us all about it. Oh, first of all, tell us. Now remember, Triumphant Comics were the collector's universe, according to the blurb. And that is issue number...
This is issue number 1. This is number 28,927 out of 30,000.
So there you go. What year did this come out?
This was in, oh god, let me have a little look here and see. It's 1993, but it doesn't actually give a date for it to have been done. So it's 1993. Mm-hmm. First print in August 1993.
First printing, you say. Yes. Who is the Chromium Man?
The Chromium Man appears to be some chap on a random planet whose skin can turn chromium, and he kind of... He's got a tortured backstory, he's living with a family out on some backwater planet. He hasn't done his chromium thing for a while, they don't really know about it. They're protesting some Imperial type overlords who are ruining their planet. The Imperial sort of chaps say, nope, you can't disperse, we're going to send in the riot gear guys and we're going to exterminate you all. And that's kind of what happens. Meanwhile, the chromium chap is out in the desert killing some beast that's attacked his crops and livestock type thing. He then finds out that His wife's been part of this protest and is in prison cells. So he goes in, chromiums up, and starts fucking shit up.
This actually sounds quite exciting. You're really selling this comic to me. What's wrong with it?
Well, it's... To be perfectly honest, it's... As Ralph said, we'll start off with the least worst for this. Why? Because it's functional. Mm. It's not actually awful, which was the biggest shock. It's not great by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
It's boilerplate stories. There's nothing that makes it stand out to be anything great. It's meh. How it hoped to stand out on the shelf, I'll never know. The art is by Adam Polina, who...
is actually a real artist.
Yes. While not to Ralph's taste, I quite liked his work on Marvel books in the late, well, mid to late 90s. It was a slightly exaggerated angular style, a bit scratchy, an acquired taste, but one I quite got into.
Mm-hmm.
Ralph doesn't agree.
Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes things can be an acquired taste. I mean, Hobnob's in biscuit form. Now, people disapprove of the Hobnob biscuit bars, rather, because people think Hobnob's going to be round and flat and dipped in tea. But I've tried the biscuit bar versions for a while, and you know what? They actually taste better. So I can't acquire a taste. I can't acquire a taste, however, from that. But it is generally just a bit dull.
It has a couple of...
Not the one we'll spend too much time
coupons. We do have... There's a couple of bits we do need to pay attention to.
Oh, good, good.
There's a letter from the publisher, because it's only their second month of existence.
Yeah.
So basically it's encouraging people to write in and to share the art and to talk about what's coming next.
Mm-hmm.
And it's giving expanding some of the details in the issue, so like footnotes. Again, something modern comics have pretty much gotten in the habit of doing, so I'm not going to say anything bad about that.
Uh-huh.
But what we are going to talk about is there's a full page devoted to a copy of a letter sent in to the Triumphant team purporting to be from Jim Shooter.
Wow.
Who was then doing Defiant Publishing.
Mm.
Saying, "The Chromium Man, Ash Can, shows a lot of promise, wonderful, quirky, stylized, beautiful art, intriguing story and crisp dialogue. This could be start of something big. Congratulations, Defiantly." That's apparently Jim Shooter.
Thing is, I still have love in my heart for Jim Shooter because he wrote Marvel Superhero Secret Wars. But I also have some hate in my heart for Jim Shooter because he also wrote Secret Wars 2.
And also, the man is quite a divisive figure in comics. There are equal tales of some of the good he's done, and he did do a lot, and again some of the tales of his treatment of certain creators and certain freelancers.
But go read his blog.
He is still very entertaining and very informative and quite honest a lot of the time, so.
Yeah, Chromium Man, eh?
It's actually dull. It's not awful, just dull. You can see the art doesn't quite have Polina's polish that would come in sort of the following few years. But, I've read worse.
So, moving on to the exciting ending of this podcast for all of you who are still there and not dead. Right, the Triumphant Unleashed. This is a free comic. It says free. It's issue zero. And as it's the Collector's Universe, this is issue printing number... 23,854 of 80,000. That's right. 80,000 copies of a collector's comic. So, Unleashed! And it does actually have an exclamation mark.
True.
The cover depicts a lady who's got boobs, and there's like a big chain sort of hanging around off her bum, I think. I'm not entirely sure what's going on there.
No, wrap around her.
It's not wrapped around very well, though. It's kind of teasing her. And she looks a bit kind of bored, actually, which is unfortunate because there's all sorts of planets behind her. It's all fairly dreadful, actually. I mean, I've actually had bowel movements recently that had more excitement to them than the expression on this lady's face on this cover. But hey, it's a free comic, eh? So inside, the people who brought this travesty to us, the writer was John Riley, artist was Fred E. Harper. Colourist was Prentiss Rollins and Bad Boy Studio.
You may recognise Prentiss Rollins.
I do recognise his name.
He inks a lot of Ethan Van Sciver's work.
Yeah, he actually went on to have a career.
Fred Harper also, I believe, we did the painted cover on the other Triumphant, and I recognise him, and he was also going to do the Miracle Man spin-off title at Eclipse.
Well done.
But that disappeared, probably, yes. Thankfully.
So, in November of 1993, this exciting thing. Now, Triumphant Unleashed was supposed to be like kind of like a backstory, a sort of let's introduce you to this exciting universe and get you wanting to read all these books. And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to describe to you the first page and give you a dramatic reading. Just to set the scene for this amazing comic. It's called The Ascension, and what we have here is not a very well composed page. There's a woman with red hair and she's holding a child, and behind her is a bearded chap who looks like he wants to die. He doesn't look very happy, and there's a Merlin type chap in the doorway. So the Merlin type chap says, what accent should I give him? We'll give him Irish.
Oh god, no.
My accents are good. Don't be sad, Zanzar. Your child will be legendary throughout the Empire. You shall be honoured. Only the most elite are after the night.
Why did you go horrible Scottish then?
And the chap who comes from Wales said, we only wish we could watch as she grows. Ever since the Emperor informed the council of his plans, we are not banned for this privilege. We're very honoured. Anyway, so as you can tell...
Can I take this comic off you right now just for that?
Yeah. As you can tell, it's kind of it's fairly generic sort of...
trying to be mysterious and all the generic
stuff. Yeah.
It has links to all of the Triumphant characters. It's got some... it's just pesh. The lead character says she wants to get away from the evil stuff she's doing as kind of rag gear. She then finds a primitive world and then sets herself up to become a god.
Yeah. Okay.
Which doesn't make her a particularly nice person because she just becomes sort of an evil person in her own right. There's a nice poetic feel to that. It's like, okay, I hate that and I've become what I hate. And in more capable hands could have been an interesting story. I say in more capable hands because the hands that wrote this are not...
The hands that wrote this were not gripping pencils, they were gripping something else.
No. Yes, the art is very... at times a bit cheesecakey, and to be honest...
There's a particularly horrific panel, you're now looking at it. Describe this panel.
It's basically where some alien chap goes, bitch my journal! Strange fat bearded chap goes on a wee motorcycle, goes, yes sir, goes, this is far from over, Sainey, this is just the beginning. You and death think too short term, that's your problem. And he looks at the woman and he goes, no, this payoff of this little adventure won't come for hundreds of years. She is basically then... Look, it's supposed to be from him looking down at her as she starts to part her skimpy robe and saying, I see, well, would you like to go celebrate? Only problem is...
She looks about 12.
On that panel she looks... It's not that she looks about 12, it's that she's a big giant swollen head, big giant swollen other things, and you know how everyone kicked up holy, holy fuck about Catwoman Zero's cover?
That would be Catwoman Zero from DC Comics, yes. Published just a month ago in the year 2012, where she was pictured in some sort of contortion, which apparently is impossible via normal bodily functions.
This kind of beat them to the punch by several years, and where I can see the big swollen enormous tits, the belly, and then all of a sudden the legs and arse are a lot smaller and about a foot and a half to the left of where they should be.
That's unfortunate.
Yes, and again, it's a case of, don't not know what's going to happen there. But, it's just bloody awful.
And then you put anything else in particular that makes it awful? Because, you know, someone set themselves up as a living god. How bad can that be? Simon Furman did that twice a week, didn't
he? Because basically, now that she's set up, anybody that doesn't worship her, she has gunned down.
Let's have a look at some of the dialogue here. Let's do it here. Here we go. Well, there's got to be something good in this.
There's a couple of that cover. It finishes.
It's all really good. Like she'll say, like the woman at one point will say, there are those out there who live to subjugate, to live by violence. This crusade suits my purpose, Ramen 3. Don't forget that. They may thank me personally. And she tries to get the Ramen 3 trap and put him so that he will serve her. There appears to be a mutant smurf type chat, I'm not sure what's going on there.
Aliens.
The aliens, yeah, they all look like smurfs. And they get shot. And there's an advert at the end for, you know, universe. And there appears to be a sort of paedophile version of Merlin on the last page.
Oh,
which is a bit suspicious to me.
He's Ramon 6.
He's Ramon 6. Yeah, good name. So, this has got me excited about Triumphant Comics, you know, because now we've sampled Riot Gear, we've sampled the Chromium Man, we've sampled the exciting Unleashed storyline that encompasses it all. What we still have to read?
We haven't read any of Scavengers, and we haven't read Prince Vandal or Dr. Chaos.
Excellent.
Because we're talking about Triumphant, it's like a Triumphant podcast, it's on the podcast. You know what's going to happen here.
No, I don't approve. I don't approve of, no. Give them away.
No.
Give them a charity.
What charity's going to take that? Covering up a turd on it.
I donate comics to Oxfam on a regular basis. Someone might enjoy it. I don't approve. It's like, did you not read Fahrenheit 451? You should never destroy literature.
You
ripped up a comic in this house before. I will not see it done again, even for comedy effect. You can take them away and you can do what you like to them. I'm telling the bear story again. I think we should stop the podcast.
Your bear story again against one less. And here, I'm doing it, remember. Somebody somewhere, if I tear this up, is getting a slight price increase on their Triumphant comic.
A listener went to the effort of purchasing these comics and sending them to us. I think that's an insult to their name and hospitality.
Well, in that case, what I'm going to insist is you're going to hold up these because I will tear them up.
Excellent, I will.
However,
uh-huh.
Uncle Phil, when this podcast airs, you need to respond to say whether you're quite happy to see them get ripped or listen to them get ripped up. And if so, that'll be the opening item for the next podcast.
And frankly, we can't leave you with a more thrilling cliffhanger than that. The conflict between literature and destruction of literature, between knowledge being lost and knowledge being gained.
There's no knowledge being lost.
I could have in my hands.
Are you about to go and suddenly go all Sturges a lot on me, bring Nazis into it?
I wasn't actually thinking about Nazis. I could have in my hand a copy of Transformers MicroMasters, one of the worst comics ever made. And I may have owned those comics several times.
I may have bullied you into buying them on at least one of those occasions.
But even I've always just passed them on or charity shopped them. Destroy them.
Don't destroy them, they get torn
recycling
up.
Recycling is allowed.
But that's what we're
doing. No, don't rip up a comic. Remember the last of the Fahrenheit 451. Ray Bradbury, bless his soul, recently departed us. My great writer. He wrote an amazing story about burning books and shit like that.
Can I just point
out? This is like burning a book. No, because it's like in Nuremberg rallies and stuff, you know, where they burn books. You don't do it. Let's put them over there and end the podcast.
Can I just point out, what do you think I was going to do once I've torn them up? Put them in a recycling bin.
I don't like to see them. I don't like them being ripped.
Do you know that the recycling of them means that they get destroyed?
That's different.
Is it?
I don't like to see written stuff, books or anything.
Are you aware of what happens to that?
I am, and I can.
Do you know how to get pumped? Make it recycle.
It's like before this podcast, as I mentioned to the listeners, I had a sausage supper, right? I can go and I can buy a sausage delivered to me in crispy battery form, and it's fine. I know how it's made. I know where it comes from. I know what's in it. But I don't have to see it happen. It's exactly the same as this. I can recycle something, but you're a book burner.
I'm not a book burner.
You're a book burner, and I'm off. Goodbye.
Bollocks to that. You were a cat, the book burner. I tore it. There's a fucking difference.
Okay, the podcast is over. We'll see you again.
There will be more shouting in approximately 2 weeks' time.
We'll see you again in about 2 weeks' time. So,
which will be after Auto Assembly. We might,
yes,
all going well, depending on how insane my schedule is try and crank out a couple of random little podcast hits.
I, however, make no promises in the grand tradition of the time. We promised to do a special spin-off podcast, which we never did. So I make no promises. Goodbye.
Farewell.
Fucking book burner.
Fucking book burner. Seriously. Fucking get in of yourself.
Oh, they're just going here.
No. Tear them up.